welcome to another episode of the High Performers Platform. We're thrilled to welcome today's guest, Stephen Lustiger, who is a professional footballer currently playing for Western United in the A-League. It was great to catch up with Stephen. We actually used to play together in the junior ranks back in Canberra for Canberra Deakin. So, you know, it's a really special one, this one, being able to jump on, catch up, hear Stephen's progressions, you know, his experience, his insights, you know, his massive career signings heading over to Croatia.
Yeah, so I played against Barcelona, which was pretty surreal, to be honest. It was albeit a friendly game, but it was celebrating the 100 years of our club, Hajduk Split. So, yeah, it was obviously in front of a packed stadium, pre-season game, but it felt like a proper European game. And, yeah, to make my debut in a game like that against players like Iniesta was pretty amazing and something that I'll always remember.
Stay tuned. Turn the volume up. This is a great conversation for any young aspiring footballer, their parents, in terms of, you know, get some knowledge around what it takes to become a professional and then what it takes to be able to stay at that top level. You know, all of these little insights, tips, recommendations, things around what to do, what not to do, all of this stuff you can't gain unless you've actually been there and done it. So it's invaluable experience and knowledge. I saw you were on SBS, the World Game, last night, weren't you?
Yeah, had a little interview with them. Yeah, just past season, the season coming up, all that stuff now. So yeah,
very good. I presume you've been quite busy in the media. Then everyone wants to, you know, figure out what's happening next.
And that is all that, you know, with what happened with the COVID and the big break, and then we went to the bubble. So there was all, you know, obviously big media around it and that. So we actually start pre-season now on Monday, which is good, back into it. And hopefully, I think the season kicks off in December. So, yeah, looking forward to it.
Very good. Yeah, they said it just came out in the media, didn't it? December
season. Yeah, December 27, yeah. How long have you had your facility there for now?
We've been here for 12 months.
Okay.
But the process of like permits and, you know, council, fire, all that stuff, mate, took 6 months. So it was very, very difficult.
Yeah.
Then we've been in lockdown for 6 months. So we've actually been open 10 days.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
It's been crazy here, hasn't it?
It has. Look, I didn't envision, you know, spending this sort of money on rent, you know, instead of investing and ticking over and earning. But what can we do? Yeah, cool. Obviously, so we'll talk about your playing career. You know, I'd like to go right back to when you and I used to play together. We used to be coached by your dad. I think that's pretty cool. The most important part, mate, if you'd like to introduce yourself and, you know, just cover where you're up to today, what you're actually doing, and then I'll ask questions based on there.
Hey, I'm Stephen Lustiger. I'm currently playing professional football in the A-League for Western United. I grew up in Canberra. It's taken me to all parts of the world. Currently in Melbourne, and playing professionally in the A-League at the moment.
Awesome. Grew up in Canberra. That's, you know, you and I both grew up there together, and we actually used to play together. You know, I'm reflecting upon that. Obviously, when I noticed you playing here in Melbourne, it sparked a light bulb moment. I've been watching you play for a number of years, obviously, in the A-League. I thought, what a cool opportunity, mate, to be able to touch base with you before you do get super busy and the season kicks off again. And we can start from, you know, way back. What unders was it when we used to play?
I think about that. I think it would have been under maybe 10s, 11s, around maybe even early under 9s. I don't think it was before that, under 9s, 10s, 11s, around that age.
Yeah, sure.
Back in Canberra Deakin.
Canberra Deakin days, that's it. Crazy times, mate, to reflect all the way back to then. Talk to us about the season, like talk to us about your career rather, progressing from those days, obviously get into senior football. Did you play senior football in Canberra before you progressed?
No, not really, to be honest. So obviously I grew up in Canberra. My first club and only real club in Canberra was Canberra Deakin. I played there until the age of about, I think, under 13s. From there I went to the ACT sort of state teams academy. So I was in there for about 3-4 years, I think, to about under 15-16. So I went through the ACT Academy of Sport and the various programs there. From there, it was a weird one because when I was about 16, I was meant to go to the AIS, the Institute of Sport, but our age group got changed that year. So the players were born in 1991, which was my age group. They changed it, and I think it was 92s, 93s. So our age was sort of like a wipeout. So I sort of had to look elsewhere. Obviously in Canberra, there was no real opportunities beyond that. After the Academy of Sport, the ACT, and obviously the AIS, I was obviously keen on and banking to go into there. But since that was scrapped, Canberra doesn't have any A-League clubs or any professional setup after that. So what most Canberra players or young players have to do these days is look elsewhere. And that took me to Sydney FC youth team. That was the first season of the National Youth League in the A-League. So I had a season there in the National Youth League. I think I was 16, 17 at that time. And from there, I signed for Gold Coast United. It was a new club in the A-League. Signed there for 2 years. I was, made my debut for the first team, predominantly played in the National Youth League, but sort of was full-time with the first team. So I got a real taste of that professional setup. From there I had 2 good years there, and that's when I got the opportunity to go overseas and went to Croatia. I signed for a big club in Croatia, Hajduk Split. That was definitely a big moment for me, and definitely in my career and my development. Was to sign there at a young age. I think I was 19, 20 when I signed. Spent a good number of years there. Got some good experience there, played some great matches there, and made my way back to Australia, and it sort of kicked on from there, I guess.
Yeah, awesome. If we stay in that moment, your debut for Hajduk Split was a pretty special one. Who'd you play against?
Yeah, so I played against Barcelona, which was pretty surreal, to be honest. It was albeit a friendly game, but it was celebrating the 100 years of our club, Hajduk Split. It was obviously in front of a packed stadium, pre-season game, but it felt like a proper European game. And, to make my debut in a game like that against players like Iniesta was pretty amazing, and something that I'll always remember.
For sure. I think, for even footballers like myself who never progressed, mate, that dream, that feeling, that's the passion. That is football. And what a special moment. So, for most of our audience, mate, we, our clientele, whether it be the kids listening, their parents, we've got a broad audience, health, fitness, business, all that type of stuff. So I think, this podcast is about, those moments, those experiences, what's led you to get to there, and then what it feels like once you are there, those types of things. So it's really cool. Coming back to Australia, so stepping back into the A-League, I think you came back to Raw. You progressed into Adelaide and the Wanderers as well in your career. Talk to us about transitioning from Croatia back to Australia.
Yeah, to be honest, it was obviously I had a bit of a taste before Croatia, Gold Coast United, so I was in a professional setup there. I was training with the first team for 2 years. I was 18, 19 at that time when I was at Gold Coast United. And obviously I had a good taste of the A-League then. I made my debut at 18 there, and mostly playing games each week in the National Youth League side there. Obviously training professional setup. So I had a good understanding and I had a good taste of what to expect in the A-League. Going overseas, looking back, it was sort of really my first taste of senior football. Albeit I started at Gold Coast United, but I only played a handful of games there. So really, my first real, taste of senior football was in Croatia at Hajduk Split. And, it was pretty much thrown right in the deep end there, because when you sign there, I do have a Croatian background, but you're still sort of looked at as a foreigner. So you expect it obviously to be better than what they have there. So obviously there was a lot of pressure straight in there. There's no cooling off period. There's no time to sort of, acclimatise. You're pretty much expected to perform. It was a challenge for me going over there, obviously. And to be fair, I sort of adapted pretty quickly. It helped that, I speak the language. I've been to Croatia many times. It's a club that I have a lot of passion for. I support, which made it, all that much better as well. I broke into the team pretty quickly, which was good. We had a coach from Bulgaria, a Bulgarian coach. His name was Balakov. He was actually a legend of Bulgarian football, played in Germany a lot. And he liked me. I think he has sort of had a different mentality. He sort of had that working hard mentality that we sort of have here in Australia, and which may be, a bit more relaxed over there in Croatia. The players are a bit more chilled out. Technically they're top players, but in terms of then probably maybe not as maybe intense as we are here. Don't maybe work as hard, let's say. We're known as working hard. So the coach sort of liked me straight away. He liked my professionalism, my discipline. I listened to him. I always did what he wanted. I broke in pretty quickly, and got a number of games under my belt. So it was looking back, it was, you know, a great first season there. After that, he left that end of that season. New coach came in, and that's when I came back to Brisbane Roar on loan. And looking back, when I came back, you know, it was, when I compared it was obviously a lot less pressure, let's say, you know, coming back to Australia. You know, when you're playing over there, and especially for a club like Caleb Split, you know, the fans, they live and breathe for that club. So every game, you know, you're under the microscope. Every game, after every game, you analyse in the paper, you get a rating from every paper on the internet. You know, there's so many different newspapers and articles that come out on us daily over there. So coming back to Australia, it was sort of like, you know, you could have a bit of a breather, let's say, and sort of relax a little bit and sort of, you know, just focus on your football. But there wasn't that added pressure that maybe that I had over there from the fans, the expectation of the club. But yeah, looking back on it now, it was, yeah, obviously had a good stint at the Raw. We won the double there. We won the premiership and the grand final as well. So that was a good time as well.
Just massive highlights for you, really, isn't it, so far? Would you say that you're still only getting warmed up, mate? I know we'll cover today the present moment. You're about to start the second season here at Western. In your football career, how do you feel you're sitting in terms of development? Well,
getting stronger and better with as I get older. Definitely I feel like I'm getting into my peak now, but still with a lot of room to improve. You know, I'm 29 now, and I feel like that's sort of getting to, you know, you're sort of getting to your best years now ahead of you. So, you know, I've got a lot of experience behind me, but still know that there's a lot of areas that I want to improve on, and I feel that I can still improve as well. Each season, I, you know, got my own goals that I set myself. And definitely, like I said, yeah, I still feel I can and continue to improve each season.
That's that professionalism, mate. It's fantastic to hear. Just touching on some of the, you know, the things that you just listed there. So talking about coaching, comparing coaching and you know, the coach actually liked you when you were over there. You know, we look at a lot of our clients who are trying to make it as professional footballers, the sort of sub-elite semi-pros. When they travel abroad to overseas, it's a mixed review. Some kids are underprepared, some kids are well-prepared. It obviously helps if you speak the language, yeah? If you're a foreign person, something I think you mentioned is quite important. Despite, you know, you are Croatian and being there and speaking the language quite well, and you've been to Croatia many, many times, you're still seen as that foreigner. So there's this extra level of expectation. You have to be better than what they already have. So that fit for that coach and your professionalism and everything you mentioned, mate, I think is perfect. Whereas if we flip it around, if the coach is different in that style, it's obviously quite hard to break into the squad, yeah?
Yeah, look, you know, I've had instances as well where, you know, there's coming Croatian coaches and they've preferred the Croatian homegrown players to me. So, you know, I went through a lot of coaches at Hazel Split. You know, I think I had four or five coaches in the space of 2-3 years. So, you know, the first coach that I had was the only foreign coach that I had, the Bulgarian Balakov. All the other coaches were, you know, homegrown coaches. So every coach is different. You know, every coach has different expectations. Everyone's got a different style, different philosophy. So, you know, the main thing is that you sort of got to adapt as well. You've got to adapt to what the coach wants, what his expectations are. You know, you can't be rigid in your own sort of thoughts and what you think is best. You sort of got to be adaptable and be willing to adapt to what the coach wants, because, you know, every coach brings his own philosophy, his own thoughts, his own methods. So you've definitely got to be open to that as well, which I've learned over the years having a lot of different coaches throughout my career, is that you've got to be adaptable and sort of willing to, you know, learn from each coach. But also, you know, you've got to sort of obviously add your own value as well. You've got to know what your values are and obviously show that to the coach as well.
I think it's super important, that adaptability, because, yeah, if you stick to your own methods and it's not favourable, then you're not going to go anywhere. You have to mould. And I think it's important as well, you said, you know, you've got to make it, you've got to work to your strengths and keep still your football. We call it football identity. Yeah, keep your flair, keep your, you know, your attributes, definitely. Talking about pressure, so, you know, talking about media and different articles and newspaper, how do you cope with this type of pressure, you know, whether it's be positive or negative?
Yeah, look, to be honest, at the start, you know, it's something new to me because, you know, in Australia you don't really have that. You know, you like it to get one article a week in the newspaper about the team or the club or about football, let's say. It's from predominantly AFL or rugby or cricket. There's not much coverage on football in Australia. So going over there, you know, like I said, there was four or five articles daily on our club, you know, and, you know, the you get rated after each game, a big write-up of each individual, how they played. So, you know, some players are more worried about what score they're going to get in the paper the next day more than anything. So especially at a young age, you sort of sometimes get caught up in that and think, oh, what's that guy going to say about me? Or how do you think that guy thought about my performance? But as, you know, as I got older, a bit more experience, you sort of block that out and don't think about that and just know that you're a good player. You deserve to be here and don't worry about what other people say, because people are always going to talk and people are always going to say things. But definitely as I got older, I learned to block that out and not obviously care or worry about what's going to be written about me or what someone thinks, how I performed. You know, obviously, the most important thing is you know yourself, how you perform, then obviously your coach as well. They're the most important ones. So definitely dealing with the pressure got easier as time went by, especially as a young player, something new. You know, like we're not exposed to that pressure in Australia at a young age, whereas over there it's normal. You know, it's normal to. I remember there was a game we were up 3-0 at halftime against a team was, you know, a bottom team, but we were up 3-0 and we got whistled off at halftime. Boom, because the fans weren't happy with the performance and we're winning 3-0. So that kind of pressure you deal with, let alone if you lose a game at home, then, you know, that's totally different. So we got booed and whistled off at halftime after being up 3-0. You can only imagine then the expectation of the fans at that club. So, you know, walking around the streets, everyone will know who you are. You know, you wouldn't want to be seen at a nightclub at the wrong hours of the night or you know, being at the beach for too long because you're pretty soon to get back to the coach. So there's a lot of things, you know, you have to sort of be careful of when you're over there because it's such a small city, small town. And like I said, everyone lives and breathes for that club there. So definitely adapting to those things was a bit of a challenge at the start.
Yeah, for sure. That's crazy just hearing, you know, you can't be at nightclubs or beaches and you walk on the street, you're well known, of course. But getting back to the coach, that's an interesting one, isn't it?
The coach would know where we play. I was outside of the football pitch, so definitely you have to be careful what you're doing.
Yeah, cool. Also in that moment, before we progress to the next couple of questions and transitioning through your career, you talked about goals there. So obviously, you know, you set goals. Most professional athletes work towards, you know, striving to be better in every session, every week, every season. You know, what were some of your goals as you were progressing? And of course, you don't have to answer, but if you'd like to, what are things that you work on, Stephen?
Goals, you know, for example, you know, at the start of the season, I might you know, set myself a target of how many goals I want to score or how many assists or how many games I want to play, things like that. And then there's other goals, you know, like in terms of my performance, my fitness, you know, my skin folds is very important, keeping my body lean, keeping it fit, my body weight, things like that as well, which is very important, just as important as the football side. I think the body is even more important, taking care of your body, which I've learned over the years as well. So I pride myself on that a lot, is taking care of my body, eating the right foods, making sure my weight's always on point, my skin folds are good. That way I give myself every opportunity to perform on the weekends and obviously be injury-free as well, which is very important as well. As you get older, you know, your body changes a little bit as well. So you definitely got to take more care with stretching, flexibility, recovery. A lot of things come into play that, you know, I think maybe players neglect a lot because it's sort of, you know, it's the easy thing is just to go home after training, have a shower and not recover or stretch or you know, eat the right foods. But those little extra 1%ers, I think I really believe are the things that make the big difference in the end.
Love that you included that. Look, we're a performance coaching, you know, we coach football, sure, technique, touches, those types of things, but we're performance-based. So we do the physical components. We've got a nutritionist. You know, we're very, very focused on the physical output, recovery, mobility, flexibility. You know, we're trying to help Australian footballers become athletes because, you know, the missing ingredient for us besides football contact hours, you know, more games, repetition, proper coaching is the athleticism. Yeah, awesome. Let's talk about this season with Western United.
Yeah, look, it was a funny season. It was pretty crazy, to be honest, because obviously no one expected COVID to come in and put a stop to everything. You know, I signed, I think, in the midpoint of the season in February, so I missed the first 6 months. I came halfway through, signed in February with the club, and I only played about 3 games with the club as I signed, and that's when everything came to a stop. So, you know, it was pretty crazy. You know, we didn't know what was going to happen. You know, and at that time we actually hit some good form as well. We had 3 wins in a row, I think it was, 2 or 3 wins, some good performances, good results, and you know, the team was coming together nicely, and that's when everything came to a stop. And you know, we weren't sure what was going to happen, if the league was going to continue, if it was going to stop. So we were in a position where, you know, we sort of had to keep ourselves fit and ready to go, but we just didn't really have a deadline or know when we're going to come back or if we're going to come back at all. So it was quite challenging, to be honest, because you know, the club sent us a program that we had to follow, but you know, we sort of didn't know what was going to happen. So we're training there for months on our own, pretty much every day on our own, not knowing if we're going to go back and finish the season. So luckily everything did get sorted out. We finished the season. We went into Sydney, into that hub bubble, which was another challenge as well, being away from, you know, family for 2 months or so, whatever it was. But in the end, you know, it was a pretty successful season for the club. First year of the club, to make the semi-finals, to make the finals, was, you know, definitely a great achievement and something that we can definitely build on for next season.
Yeah, super exciting. Yeah, the season that the club had, first season in A-League, what comes next? It's going to be massive. It's very, very, you know, inspiring.
Big buzz around the club now. Obviously, they're looking at, you know, starting to build the new stadium next season. They've released a big training facility that they're going to start building as well. So there's definitely big things coming from Western United in the near future.
Absolutely. Can we just touch on some of the training? So in that moment of uncertainty, I think that's what's, you know, killed the majority of Melbourne, is this uncertainty that, you know, we don't know what's happening, yeah? For the football season, for the A-League, everything that you guys went through, that uncertainty, not knowing what comes next. So keeping yourself fit, obviously you have programs from your performance staff and physios and that type of stuff. What were you actually working on? Like, were you...
To be honest, yeah, look, we got given the program from our club, which was a mixture of, obviously, you know, running, you know, fitness, you know, running, ball, with the ball as well. So we got given the program. Look, I don't know if everyone followed it exactly to what they gave. You know, every player sort of always drifts and does what they feel they need for their own body as well, which is understandable. Every player, you know, needs different things, prepares different ways, trains different ways as well. So, look, I remember, you know, looking back to what I did, you know, I did a lot of, obviously, running, you know, to obviously keep my base fitness was important. I didn't want to lose that because I was at a good fitness base. So I didn't want that to drop off. And obviously not playing games, not training in a team environment, that can drop off pretty quickly, that sharpness as well. So, you know, I had drills where I was doing sort of longer distance running, but then I'll cut it back and I did a lot of short explosive running as well. So I don't like to do too much sort of longer distance running. When I've already got that base, you know, if that base isn't built up, then yeah, sure, I'll work on that, you know, sort of longer distance and build that base up. But when once I feel that base is sort of is solid and good, that's when I focus on more the short, sharp agility drills, change of directions. But then I'd always incorporate, you know, ball work as well. So I sort of mix the two up. You know, I'd usually start with some ball drills, technique work, shooting, passing, and then I'd always do the hard stuff at the end. That's sort of how I do my things on my own. Everyone's different, I guess. And then obviously gym work as well is important to me, but it's a bit hard with obviously all the gyms closed. So I sort of had to, you know, improvise and do more body weight, plyometrics, sort of different exercises and that. But overall, you know, I was pretty satisfied the way I came back. Once everyone did come back to training, everyone did come in good condition, which sort of gave us that foundation to finish the season off strong.
Yeah, awesome. I love that you touched on, you know, the variety of trainings. It wasn't just aerobic as such. It was shorter, sharper stuff as well, mixing it up. Once you've already have the base, then incorporating more specific movements. Obviously, again, being performance coach, we see a lot of different things. We all, as a coach, we have our own philosophies, but watching some of the programs come through the systems, and whether it be from some of the other clubs, not your club, but some of the other clubs in their youth systems, you know, doing 6Ks, 10Ks, all of this stuff, but then they're perhaps missing out on the short stuff, anaerobic, yeah, ball work.
I'm big on, you know, short, sharp movements, you know, because they're the movements that you're doing in games, especially as a midfielder. You know, you're not going to be doing a 100-meter sprint, let's say, as a midfielder. You know, I'm going to be doing 20, 10, 20 meters bursts every now and then, 5-meter bursts. So I sort of condition my body now to be a bit more, you know, the accelerations are very important as a midfielder and deceleration. So that's what I focus on a lot now.
Yeah, it's awesome. And we, and again, looking at the semi-professional level and what filters down, we look at a lot of the performance coaching, a lot of the running programs being prescribed. And Unfortunately, a lot of it's AFL footy background. And for me, and we'll get into to coaching, Stephen, in a moment, but for me, it's not good enough. And I don't mean any disrespect or to say that mine's better. You know, there's no one better than the other. However, specific movements for footballers, especially in the midfield, especially in your wingers, like everyone's got different energy systems or different meters. You know, we need to program so much more specific. Your hundreds, your 200s, your 300s, sure, it's good for, you know, hamstring territory or aerobic base and stuff, but we're just missing the mark, I think, entirely.
I agree 100%. Like I said, I'm big on those short movements, sharp movements. You know, you've got to be mobile as a player these days. You've got to be flexible. You've got to be adaptable. So, you know, you've got to be explosive as well. You know, I feel like you've got to be able to change pace as well. You've got to have that change of burst. I know when I was younger, I sort of did focus a bit more on the longer distance stuff, and maybe too much. So looking back, I wish that I did focus a bit more on the shorter, sharper movements as well.
Well, we may as well transition into coaching. So again, your company, if you want to talk about that, mate, when did you start coaching? Talk to us about your philosophies and what you're doing in terms of moving forward. So that'd be great.
Yeah, I just a couple of months ago launched my own academy here in Melbourne called Lustica Football. I've had the idea for a while, but obviously once we stopped with the COVID and we had a long break, it sort of gave me a lot of time to launch that and start that up, and progress that now and got a lot of young kids coming through now. Look, I've been, you know, exposed to a lot of different academies and methods, you know, throughout when I was in Croatia and in various different countries that I've been to. So I've, you know, got a lot of different ideas, what I like to bring and teach to these younger players. So, you know, I did had a little setup as well in Brisbane when I was a bit younger, when I was at Brisbane Roar, had a little academy going there. Albeit on a much smaller scale than I have now. But that's when I sort of got that passion and drive for it, to sort of, you know, teach this younger generation the right way to train, I guess, let's say. So, you know, what I look at now is, you know, I focus a lot on technique, let's say, technique with the ball, a lot of it, because I just feel like players aren't taught the right things at a young age here, especially when I look at the way players are taught in Croatia at the best academies they have there in Europe. And I'd watch the various academies there, the 8, 9, 10-year-olds there, they train the way we train at 15, 16 here. So, you know, when I look at it, I feel like we're 5 years behind them here. So definitely I feel like we don't have enough good coaches here in Australia to teach the younger players the right way, the right technique, the right way to pass the ball, to control the ball. So I've been sort of incorporate a lot of things, you know, with the ball and then also without the ball as well. I feel being a good athlete is very important as well. So I pride myself on that as well, being a good athlete, looking after my body, because, like I said, you know, I feel like, especially in modern football, if you're not a good athlete, you don't have much chance of, you know, it doesn't count much if you're a good footballer and not a good athlete, because the amount of work you've got to get through a game these days is very demanding. You know, I tell a lot of my boys that I train that, you know, you've got to look after your body and condition your body as well. But definitely at an early age, I think the most important is technique and making sure that, you know, you get the right habits at an early age.
For sure, I agree. You know, 100% with everything you've just said. The biggest theme at the moment, it's become a bit of a trend, yeah? The athleticism. We look at Bayern in Bayern Munich when they won the Champions League. You look at all the players with the arms and the quads, and it's sort of like the football world here in Australia has gone, holy shit, like you can do strength training for football, you know? And we need to be athletes. Like it's almost like it was forgotten or unknown until that happened. And obviously, you know, we've been preaching this type of stuff for many years, yeah? You've got to be an athlete to be able to become a footballer. It's as simple as that. The physical demands of it, whether it be in Australia, in Europe, wherever. Technique, you know, you hit the nail on the head there. There's not enough good coaches coaching simple technique. You know, we call it the basics, but it's the necessities. Being able to control a football, pass a football, that's the game, you know? So you can't get any more simple or specific than, you know, the right types of coaching, the right types of technique and building from that. Yep.
100%. I think it's just the simple things that, you know, that we get wrong here. Just the basics, which are usually the hardest thing to do, are the basics. You know, we get too caught up with, you know, doing all these different types of tricks and that. But then when it comes to a game, just the basic passing and receiving, you know, hitting the ball with the right speed, not having a bobble in your pass, diagonals, you know, a lot of different things, a lot of different different things that I see that players just lack here in Australia. Just simple things that they're just their normal habits are completely wrong. And that's something that I definitely focus on with all my players.
I agree. And I'm just painting pictures in my head with things that you're describing here. Correct side pass, yeah? How much does a game flow if it's just a correct side pass every time the ball's moved?
Yeah.
Simple, simple stuff. Problems in youth football.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah, look, you know, at the moment, it's pretty diabolical, to be honest. You know, there's no real pathway for young players at the moment. You know, they've got a National Youth League that has 8 games in a season, which is crazy, absolutely crazy. So, you know, when I always compare back to Europe, because I see, you know, players from Hajduk Split or Dinamo Zagreb when I was in Croatia get sold for 5, 6 to 10 million euros to big clubs, and, you know, obviously they're producing these players. So, you know, I'll be seeing how their academies operated. They're playing, you know, 60, 70, 80 games a year at the age of 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. And by the time they're 16, 17, 18, they've got more than 1,000 games in them. You know what I mean? So, you know, they're playing big tournaments. Every month they go to big tournaments around Europe where they're playing against the best of the best, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Man United, the best European countries. You know, they have many tournaments every few months that they go to, let alone then all the games they play in their own countries as well. So the amount of football that they're playing compared to what we're playing here, you can't compare. So then, you know, no wonder they're producing top quality players and we aren't here. We aren't. So definitely, at the moment, the setup is completely wrong. You know, at least I remember when I started National Youth League, which is right when the Youth League started, you know, at least we were still playing 25, 26 games a season. So it was aligned with the A-League. So at least, you know, it was a step in the right direction. They, you know, they started off in the right direction. And, you know, I was hoping that they were going to sort of build on that, but it only seemed to go downhill from there. So the first 2 years that I played in the National Youth League, we played, I don't know, it was, you know, 30 games a season or 25 games. So it was pretty much aligned with the A-League season. So we're playing curtain raisers to the A-League game. So back then, it was good for my development because I was still getting 25, 30 games in a season. But still, when I compare it to Europe, it definitely was nowhere near enough. They're playing 70, 80 games a season. So we're not even close. Even training, you know, when I looked at the 8, 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds in Croatia, you know, they're training twice a day. They're training in a professional setup. They're training like the first team pretty much. It was full on, you know, so they train twice a day. You know, obviously they have their rest days as well, but when they trained, it was like the first team training. So, you know, at 8, 9 years of age in Australia, I don't think anyone's training twice a day. Or 5 times a week. There's no chance they're training 5 times a week properly in a professional setup or a professional academy. So definitely I think that's something that, you know, they have to sort out here in Australia is definitely the pathway for youngsters and for the youth. They've got to have the right development system. If that's you know, A-League academy sides, I don't know what the way forward is, but that's something definitely they have to sort out because, you know, for the National Youth League to have 8 games a season is, you know, it's
crazy.
It's crazy.
I fully agree 100%. And looking at, you know, semi-professional, take away the A-League academies and the pathways, and I presume that they're getting better and better. I don't know too much about them, but contact hours and accumulation, you know, it's at 10,000 hours deliberate and purposeful practice. It doesn't matter if it's football, business, whatever it is, that's when we specialize. You know, I compare to the Spanish model where our background is Spanish, and it's the same thing. 8, 9s, they're playing football as good as the first team. They're being coached by proper coaches. You know, they invest some of their best coaches into the 8, 9s. 10s, 12s, you know, rather than focusing on the senior football, we need to focus on the younger demographic, teaching correct technique, because once technique is there, you can play, you know, any brand of football. If technique's not there, then we're stuck. We lose that. By the time these kids are 16, 18, 20, it's almost too late to teach that you know, the basics, necessities. Coaches are too proud in these systems to go back and learn the basics, yeah? We just expect things. And if it's not been taught till you get there, it's just missing. So there's more than a few problems. Talking about clubs, again, semi-professionally, NPL systems, you know, why don't we focus on spending as much as you spend on your first team, but put it into the juniors and actually getting a developmental pathway so your under-10s team becomes your senior football team and you sell one player, you know?
Well, to be honest, back in the old NSL, that's how it used to work. And that's why we're producing players like Mark Viduka and the golden generation of the Socceroos, most of them did come out of the old NSL, you know. So you know, they had it right back then. So you'd think, fast forward 20, 30 years, you think they would have improved it, but it's only gone backwards. So, you know, back then when the NSL, you know, they obviously had, you know, the old Sydney United, South Melbourne, Sydney Olympics, they had academies. They had, everyone went through the system then all the way to the first team. So there was a pathway for the youngsters, the under 10s. They had a goal that, you know, once they hit 16, 17, 18, their goal is to get into the first team. Whereas at the moment, you know, it's hard for me to compare Western United because they're just a new club now. So we don't have a youth set up yet. But, you know, obviously they're going to work on that. But, you know, you want to have your academies, 8, 10-year-olds, 11s, 12s, 13s to, you know, be trained in a professional environment and then thrive to get to the first team. Because that's the way all the best clubs in Europe do it. I mean, I remember when I think I was about 13, 14, we went to a tour to Spain and we played Barcelona. And I remember we got smacked like 16-0. It was like crazy. And then I played two games. I played for the old team. We lost 16-0. And then I think I played after that again for my age group and lost 8-0. And I remember coming off the pitch thinking, man, so far behind them, it's unbelievable. So I remember going back to Australia and just working my ass off just to try and sort of close that gap a little bit because I thought I was at a good level at that age. But then when I went there, I got a good reality check and realized that, yeah, I'm a long way off. Long way off, and that really gave me a good reality check when I did experience that.
I think that's important as well. So if you are a young player, if you're a parent with a child who wants to become a professional footballer, you have to get to Europe, you know, go to some of the best leagues. Don't just watch football, but actually, you know, enter your son or daughter into an academy to witness this. You've got to, you know, until you get there, you just don't know how far off the mark you are.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, if anything, that will give you confidence as well when you do come back to Australia and you are competing with your own age group. You know, you have that confidence that, okay, I did go overseas and experience what the trainings are like over there. So it does give you that bit of confidence and boost and sort of motivation and energy to sort of, you know, keep driving and keep improving and keep aspiring to get to the level that you want to get to.
For sure. And just the last bit that stuck in my brain about these clubs and the NPL system, and no disrespect or, you know, nothing too negative, but the NSL days, they had the system right. So if we had the system right once, it's achievable again. But I think we need to, you know, take all the ego and the pride out of it and stop playing Monopoly. Yeah. It's like, let's invest as much as we can to win a title. Well, what's that? Do you win a title? You get a trophy for one season and your players disperse anyways. So, you know, it's all backwards, mate.
It's a good time for them to reassess everything. And definitely now, I think, hopefully moving forward, I think you will see more youngsters be given a chance just because now there's less money in the game because of what's happened with the COVID. There's less money from TV deals, less sponsorship. The salary cap's been decreased. So that means, you know, the league's not going to attract as many quality players as they have in the past. So, you know, clubs are going to have to turn to their youth, their younger players, and I think that's definitely a positive. Obviously, you know, all clubs want to win. But at the end of the day as well, you know, we've got to produce good players. And why can't we be selling players and getting good transfer fee for players like they are in Europe?
Power questions for you, mate. Tips to younger footballers. We'll start with that one.
Yeah, look, I always just say, you know, you obviously got to have your goals and your dreams, what you want to achieve. You know, for me, you know, it's about working hard, but also being disciplined and you know, really believing in yourself and having no fear, really. You know, looking back, you know, don't worry too much what people say. You know, have your own passion, have your own dreams and just follow them. Because, you know, I really believe that, you know, if you put in the work, you know, you're going to be rewarded somewhere down the line. It'll always come back to you. So, you know, you've got to, you know, some players want to get to the top level. Some players are happy to play A-League. Some players are happy to play NPL. Everyone's got their own dreams and where they want to go. So I think it's important that you know what your goal is and to sort of stick at it and put in the work. Because like I said, I really believe, you know, whatever you put into the game, you're going to get out of it as well. So definitely just work hard, be disciplined, and just enjoy it as well.
I think that's a key, you know, very, very important message. We have a lot of clients that, you know, they have goals and stuff, but they focus on that one season. And if you don't get there just yet, you can't let that shatter your hopes and dreams. You've got to keep pushing.
Sometimes it is the you know, the setbacks that sort of can drive you to get to that next level as well. So there's nothing wrong with having setbacks. Everyone's going to have setbacks. No one's going to get into every selection or every team that, you know, it's going to happen that you're not going to get selected. And it's, you know, the best players have missed selections. I know, you know, someone like, I'll use an example, Luka Modric, who's one of the best midfielders in the world at Real Madrid. He got overlooked by Hajduk Split when he was younger, and then he went to Dinamo Zagreb, and the rest, you know, he went on from there. So, you know, players, you know, at a young age, you know, you're always going to have setbacks, but I think definitely use them as motivation to keep on driving and keep on aspiring to get to where you want to get to.
One of your most challenging or hardest football moments on reflection?
There's always been tough moments in football. Your career never goes uphill. You know, there's always challenges that you face, you know, if that's an injury, different injuries, or, you know, times where you're not playing as much as you would like to play. There's always, you know, challenges that you face. There's times where, you know, you haven't been selected in the squad, or you're on the bench, or the coach doesn't rate you as much, and you're not playing the team. So, you know, you've got to deal with that with yourself, you know, because no one's gonna help you through that time. And that's when, you know, you see a lot of players put their heads down and sort of give up in a sense. So there's times that I've been challenged as well by coaches, and, you know, it's sort of driven me to, okay, I'm going to prove you wrong and show you that, yeah, I should be playing. I should be the main player in your team. So I have, you know, that sometimes does give me that, you know, that motivation to, you know, when there is a little setback, I definitely use that as a positive and try and prove them wrong.
Coaching moments, in terms of, you know, a highlight for you, whether it be within your own company or, you know, being coached yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I've experienced a lot of different coaches throughout my career. I've had quite a few. Looking back now, you know, now Mark Rudin, I rate him very highly at West United. New young coach, but he's done a phenomenal job now, you know, at West United. Also, last season at Wellington Phoenix, he did a great job. So, working with him, I feel like he's definitely improved my game and sort of helping me progress my game and taking it to another level. So he's one of them, definitely here in Australia, that I've really enjoyed working with. Overseas, I've had a few good ones as well in Croatia. Igor Tudor, he's currently assistant coach at Juventus. He was my coach in Croatia. Hajduk, he was one of the coaches there. You know, he had good stints in Serie A. He was head coach at Galatasaray in Turkey, in Greece. So he was another one. Look, I've had a lot of different coaches. So, you know, I always take bits from all of them and, you know, try to learn as much as I can from them.
Yeah, that's awesome. In terms of players, obviously you've played with some phenomenal players, and being a great player yourself, you know, who are some of the best players you've played with and the reasoning as to why?
Players I played with, there's a few in the A-League that, you know, one that comes to mind now is Diamanti. Diamanti here at West United, Besar Berisha, Thomas Broich comes to mind. Them three definitely stick out here in the A-League that I've played with.
And what about in Europe, back in Croatia, even against that players you've played against?
Played against Iniesta. It was definitely will be up there with one of the best that I've played against. When we played against Inter Milan in a Europa League game, played against like players like Wesley Schneider, Zanetti, Milito, Cambiasso. And played against Liverpool. We played a friendly game against Liverpool with Brisbane Roar. They had a good team there with Jordan Henderson. Can't remember who else was there. That was 2015. So there's quite a few players there. Even Arsenal, we played against Arsenal in 2017, I think it was. Some good players there. Mesut Ozil. So definitely some pretty quality names there.
For sure. And these questions might be a bit, bland or seem silly to you, mate, but for the rest of us, just trying to visualise and feel what it's like, you know, being on the pitch, first and foremost, professional footballer yourself, yeah, in front of a stadium full of people, but then lining up with and against these phenomenal athletes.
It's just spectacular. Growing up, you know, I used to watch players like Iniesta growing up as a young boy, you know, watching Barcelona on TV, Champions League games, so... Then sharing the field with him was pretty crazy, pretty surreal. Definitely those experiences I always cherish and reflect on and know that, you know it was hard work that got me to those situations, and to be able to play and share fields with players like that.
It's massive. Huge, huge, huge. In terms of questions, mate, that's all I had. I'm just trying to get a nice, broad piece of info, because again, our audience is so broad, mate. Anything else you'd like to cover? You want to talk about, I don't know how much time you've got, but football, coaching, playing, any more insights, mate? Is there anything you'd like to cover?
Look, you know, at the moment, I'm obviously still focused mainly on my football career. That's my number one priority. You know, this coaching now is sort of, you know, I've got it in my head, you know, the ideas that I want to have, but it's sort of, you know, still, you know, my priority is playing and focusing on my football. Coaching will sort of come down the years as well, you know, something that I want to develop later on in the years to come. So at the moment, I've sort of, you know, launched that now, but, you know, the spare hours that I do have outside of my regular training, I do devote to my academy now, which, you know, does keep me occupied now, because as footballers, we do have a bit of spare time. You know, we train in the mornings hard, and then usually the rest of the day off we have free. So, you know, now that I've got this academy, it's sort of given me, you know, time to sort of reflect and sort of work out my philosophy and the way direction I want to go, because definitely I feel like it's something that I have a passion for later on. You know, my passion has always been football. So at the moment I'm doing what I love, which is playing. But, you know, when that comes to an end, I think the second best thing for me is then coaching, because obviously I won't get to play anymore. So that's coaching or mentoring or teaching, you know, coaching youngsters or older players, I'm not sure yet. But definitely at the moment I'm enjoying coaching players, teaching them, you know, various techniques and definitely, you know, sharing my experiences as being, you know, an elite athlete, getting to that level and what it does take to get to that level, because, you know, it's not easy. I've seen many, many talented players, more talented players that have been more than talented than me, but I've sort of lacked that other part, which is more important, definitely the mental side of the game, having, you know, a strong mind, and obviously the physical side as well, being a good athlete. So it's the whole package now. It's not good enough just being talented. So I definitely like to share my experiences with players and, you know, let them know what it does take to get to that level, because it's not easy. It's not easy at all. And, you know, and to also stay at that level is even harder. You know, you can get to that level, but then to maintain that for, you know, 10, 15 years is even harder. So they're things that I like to share with my players.
For sure. And that's massive. First to get through that barrier and actually make it, you know, that's phenomenal within itself, but then to stay there, that's, for me, that's the winning formula. Yeah.
Well, I think there's a stat that PFA brought out saying by the age of 26, 27 players, you know, are finished usually in Australia. So, you know, they usually get to 27, 28 and that's it for them. So, you know, that's why I think it is important and believe it's important to take care of your body, because as you get older, your body does change a little bit. And, you know, if you look after your body, you're going to add years to your career. So, you know, myself, I feel like as I've gotten older, my body's been getting better, getting stronger, getting fitter. So definitely, you know, every player's body's different, you know. So definitely that's one thing that I pride myself on, is looking after myself.
Absolutely. Last question for you. In terms of training, like keeping yourself fit, healthy, you know, all the stuff you've described throughout this convo, you've obviously worked with some specialists in your career. You've obviously worked with somebody to get you across to Croatia. Were you engaging multiple performance coaches, nutritionists, physios, or how did that look?
Yeah, I always did work with someone. In Croatia, I was lucky enough to work with a really good coach. Who's actually a professor, and he, you know, he specializes. His daughter's actually an Olympic champion in high jump. And then his son plays for the Croatian national team now, plays for CSKA in Moscow. Gun player, like absolute machine, of an athlete as well. So I worked with him for my whole time while I was in Croatia, and, you know, I learned a lot from him. It was a lot on the being a good athlete. He, you know, conditioned my body very well. And also worked on the technical side as well. So he incorporated everything in that one session. And, you know, I did learn a lot from him, and he did, you know, help me a lot into becoming the athlete that I am today. So definitely, yeah, I would always try and seek, you know, if that's extra training or extra advice on how to better myself and become a better athlete.
Yeah, I think that's very important. I think that's a great note to sort of wrap things up on, is, you know, training wherever you are, whichever club and system, let's hope it's a phenomenal system and professional structure, but getting the extras, you know, doing the extra ones and twos. I think you said it early on, the one percenters, mate, they accumulate. And whether it's this season or the next five seasons, you got to look after yourself. It's the most important thing.
Yeah, 100% agree with this.
Awesome. Well, mate, I'm thrilled with that. It's awesome to be able to catch up with you. It's been a long time. Thanks for your time and jumping on this podcast.
Sounds good. Sounds good. And yeah, thanks for reaching out, and great to catch up after all those years back at Canberra Deakin. It's been a long time, but yeah, definitely good to see you, and good to see that you're doing well here in Melbourne, and great to see you got your own setup there, and it looks great from everything that I've seen. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. When this this COVID thing blows over, mate, we'll catch up in person. I'll invite you out to the centre, and we'll talk. Yeah,
100%.
Awesome. Thanks for your time. And, hey, good luck for the season. We're only 4 weeks away, supposedly. So
yeah, appreciate it.
Looking forward to it, mate. Cheers. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, that concludes episode 6. We appreciate you guys tuning in and listening, and all of your support. If you haven't done so yet, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. This helps us to grow the platform and, climb the charts, which therefore gives us more exposure and allows us to, sit down, interview, more inspiring people in, great places. So we really do appreciate any support you can give. Share it with somebody, like it, leave a review. That'd be great. This podcast has been brought to you by The Unknown, both The Unknown Barbershop in Preston, The Unknown Barbershop in Oakley. If you guys are in Melbourne looking for a fresh haircut or a fade, please search these guys up. They're our official sponsor. We appreciate their support too. I'm your host, Jacob Fallon, for listening.